Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how empathic are you? And what does that mean to be empathic? And if you are, how easy is it to be an empath? Something I think we all aspire to, but it has a lot of responsibilities. And we're going to get into it quite deeply with the author of a wonderful book that really covers the gamut. It's so profound and helpful, called The Way of the Empath: How Compassion, Empathy, and Intuition Can Heal Your World. And I'm so happy to be interviewing the author, who's also a friend, Elaine Clayton. Elaine, welcome to Energy Stew. Welcome back to Energy Stew.
Yes, thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
And this is a fascinating book because being an empath can mean many different things to many different people, mm-hmm. because we're all different. Mm-hmm. And it's about being sensitive in many ways that aren't necessarily the normal mundane sensitivities.
mm-hmm. That's right.
And more and more people are becoming empathic, mm-hmm. because consciousness is opening up, mm-hmm. in ways that people are just becoming familiar with the magic of, mm-hmm. living this way.
Yes, that's a good point.
It's very magical.
More fun. I mean, it's hard at times being so sensitive, but it's fun because there is that magic.
Well, what's fun is that you get to experience unusual, beautiful things that, mm-hmm. a lot of people can't see, hear, or know because their senses can't reach that place yet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet we're all born to appreciate beauty and love and et cetera, nature. But we're talking about other dimensional aspects of our reality, mm-hmm. that are hard for people who aren't other dimensional to understand.
they in their role, for whatever possibly mysterious reason they are in their role, aren't experiencing those other dimensions, but empathic people do.
Right. But what does that mean? Let's talk about what it means, yeah. to experience other dimensions, because a lot of times, I mean, we are living in the mundane world. You know, mm-hmm. we are partly muggles. Mm-hmm. And we, yes. need to understand that we got to get along, mm-hmm. in ways that aren't always easy when people don't understand where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're animals, so we have to eat and we need to sleep and we get uncomfortable and we're agitated and we have to move around. And so yet at the same time, if that surface reality is all we are aware of, we're usually pretty miserable. And, you know, over the centuries, we've realized that everything is made up of energy moving in some way, you know, fast or slower than other things. So We're starting to get that things aren't always as they seem in our mundane world. Our mundane world is actually miraculously, surprisingly, you know, other. It is unbelievable. Yet it you know, if we only accept, you know, the physical reality on the surface as we think we experience it every day, I don't think we're that happy, you know, because you can't manipulate everything the way you would want to. You can't control the environment. You can't control people. So therefore, what do? You know?
But you talk about that in the book, about, mm-hmm. who's the boss. And in terms of control, uh-huh. how much can we control? And who in us, our ego perhaps, thinks it can run things in a better way?
Yeah. Well, I love talking about the ego because the ego serves us. I mean, and then we have different stages of development So when you're learning and getting a sense of who am I, you know, you're very young, and those impressions really stick, you know, throughout our lives, usually those initial impressions. So we usually kind of work off of those, whether we're conscious of it or not. And then when we get into young adulthood, we know we have to survive on our own, you know? And so there's an ambition. There's the ego says, wants to work with the spirit, I think, or the willpower. What do I want to do? This is what you should do. And sometimes the this is what you should do is stuff you don't really want to do. That's typical in our world. You shouldn't do that. Don't go into music. There's no money. Go be a physical therapist. That's a surefire thing or whatever. So there's tension with the ego. But when the ego serves us, I think it helps us set ourselves up for the most important lessons we'll ever have. Because, you know, you watch everybody, you get some dreams realized or you're ambitious and you try to do some things and there's all this great stuff about it. And yet also you can go through some of the hardest things you've ever gone through. I mean, ultimately the ego can get us in trouble too, especially if we feel like we have to win, dominate, you know. But I love the tension between it is kind of what we're stuck with. We're stuck with dealing with the ego and trying to use it for the good things that we can get out of it, I think.
Yeah, I guess the idea is to understand the ego's purpose and how it supports us or thinks it supports us and get the most of that.
That's hard. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, knowing that the ego has limitations that we have to be very aware of.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the hardest. That's probably the way our media is now too. You see so many people reach a point that would be like the pinnacle of the ego. Someone becomes king of this or that. And then you watch how it can't sustain them and stuff crushes down around them. I mean, it wants to believe it's the one that knows, but it has its limitations, like you said. And have you ever had that thing where you go, oh, I think I want to, and then you have to try to meditate and say, but is it my ego or is it my soul or is it my purpose or is it just my ego? You know, usually you kind of know because you just know you're going to do a certain thing. You're going to learn a certain thing. You're going to go after a certain thing, be a certain way or in a certain place. Right. But sometimes, you know, it's kind of fun and kind of difficult when you're not sure if it's, you know, how much of it is an ego desire that is destructive somewhere in there too.
Well, I think our soul works with our ego to draw us forward in life for the purpose of our shadows and the purpose of the struggle that our souls have come here to undertake because of the need for soul growth. And so our souls don't protect us from our ego so much as use our ego to keep us in divine order.
I agree with that. You know how I'm so into Kabbalistic studies and mystical, exploration. So I heard a rabbi talk about the tree of life in a way that speaks to what you just said. Instead of thinking of our soul as in some way in conflict with the ego. It may be that we do experience, it feels that way.
It feels that way, so
we are not going to deny that, but then picture the tree of life and it's symbolic of the creation of the earth. You see this one glorious tree that's symbolic of, you know, our lives and our experiences. But it's not heaven. So like in Genesis, you know, it's like, hey, God starts creating and then something happens and it kind of goes awry or it's suffering gets introduced. So it's kind of a mind game and you can spend a lot of time thinking about what is paradise. And then paradise wouldn't have a tree that has fruit you can't have because paradise would let you eat anything. You know, I mean, paradise.
That's such an illusion because we're not here to not learn from experience.
That's where I was going. So what, why I think this is really cool is that the point is not that paradise is perfect or earth as paradise, think of it that way. And not that separation from God or whatever is so evil. It's more that that's how we learn. It's the tree of knowledge, really. We learn through our experiences. We're not conscious till we're conscious. So it's almost like heaven depends on earth just as much as we here depend on the spirit realms, you know, the knowledge beyond the earth.
For now, in this incarnation, we're here to struggle.
Sadly.
Our egos are sad about it. But
sometimes I'm actually totally miserable. I'm saying, you know, really, God, come on. This is just, you know.
Right, but our souls are not unhappy because our soul, everything is in divine order. And we are fulfilling our soul's plan for this life to find these particular struggles that we have to suffer through.
Yeah, and that is so interesting too, because suffering, you know, you hear people say, and you'll see it as a meme, suffering is a choice. And it's really true. So it's kind of interesting to play with that at a moment where you feel kind of blissful. And then another moment, the misery, you know, some thought, memory, construct that you don't like. And so it's like, I'm either going to stay right there in the misery, or I'm going to just shift it slightly back into the bliss. And it's way more complex than that. Let's say if you're living with someone violent, let's say you found yourself in a moment of hell and you're living with someone violent. And a lot of people have, it could be a roommate, it could be a partner, or they're doing something you can't tolerate. You can't just shift into bliss until that situation gets dealt with. So it's not always real easy. It takes time. It takes, you know, I don't know, a lot of maneuvers.
Hard work.
And so we just do our best through every little era that we're in, but still it is true. The mental process is usually what keeps us miserable. We don't have to do that.
Well said. We that's our ego, the mental process and the mind that wants to be so smart gets into trouble often.
Can't help it.
Yeah, but the idea is to honor the journey and to live in the aspiration or the hope of finding light. There are many dark nights of the soul in our lives, and when we're in those dark nights, we don't necessarily have any flashlights. We just have to kind of remember that there is light. And
well, you know, I love the word aspiration. And I think the first time I got this, so I was studying, I was probably about 21, I think. And I was studying Torah by myself. And I was really intrigued by the breath of life. So that was a concept I was like really personally exploring. And I had something I was mentally, like you said, your mind, you know, our mind tries to solve things, do things, you know, in my mind, I was trying to fix the situation and nothing I did was working. And I remember going to yoga for the first time. And the first thing the yogi said was, talked about breathing, focus on your breathing. And I was connecting that with my own little personal thing about the breath of life. And I thought, I got it for the first time. I got it that I don't have to solve the problem. I just have to breathe.
I love it.
Oh my God, it changed my life. You know, and I even realized I really wasn't breathing before because I was barely sucking in air because I was tense and wasn't aware of my breath at all. The less breath, the less agency, you know, here. Less activation. So, you know, I've tried to go back to that as often as I can. It's easy to forget those things, but I think right. we don't have to solve it all.
But breathing, it makes you more present. Breathing is, you know, to be aware of breathing, because we can't help it, but to be aware just brings us into it in a way that we're not in our mundane world of, you know, of our mind spinning on us.
Yes, I agree. Oh yeah, I totally get that.
And really the way to explore higher consciousness is to quiet the mind down as much as possible.
And that's one of the harder things to do, because our mind just can't help it, you know. That's one of the reasons why I do the stream drawing, is because you get to be who you are, which is a creator, and you get to be active while you're also entering a waking state of stream of consciousness. So you're letting your mind go, but you're not having to just sit there. You know, we think we have to sit there, you know, you're kind of doing something that is creative. So it's natural, but you slide into that stream of consciousness flow where stuff surfaces maybe, but, you know, you get to coast through. I don't know. There's something, it feels really good.
Yeah. The whole idea is to live in trusting the process of our minds, of our breath, of our reality around us that is in divine order to begin with. Mm-hmm. So we're really not driving the ship. We're really passengers, and we get to enjoy the journey better if we take our hands off the wheel and know that it's being driven anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting too, because we forget, and we often won't accept that things are in divine order, especially when we are angry at someone or ourselves. There's a lot of anger. A lot of what blocks empathic sensing, I think, is a hardened heart, which at its root is probably anger, and it might be justified. Some form of resentment against maybe powers that we couldn't control when we were young, or whatever, something that creates in us a resistance, so that there's a hardness that will not allow, even entertain, that things may actually be in divine order. Every mistake, mm-hmm. every consequence, even everything that hurt, in that perhaps we learned, but it's very hard for us to accept that. And I don't have it solved in my mind, because I can't accept some things that have happened.
Right, but we're in a hard school.
Yeah, we are.
And the hard school has some very, very painful lessons for us, mm-hmm. that we can either understand that these are hard lessons for us, or just resist that we hate life and what did I think? Why should I even have thought that coming here was a good idea?
Or go on about how unfair it is, you know. And then, you know, but it gets so complex, because we in our comfort and ability to kind of try to comprehend and grapple with the stuff we love to talk about. And then you think of things going on, like with what's happening in Ukraine, and or even right in our own community, stuff that, you know, seems vastly horrific.
Yeah, there's ugliness all around us all the time, in ways that this is a dense planet, and we come here for that.
And yeah, so, the density is an important word there. Density.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And it frustrates empaths, because there are certain things that go on every day that we can't be as magical about as we'd like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, where we're stuck, and intuition just doesn't seem to have the answer.
And at least it comes in a divine timing sort of way. Yeah. Hilariously. Yeah, right. Sometimes there. After we say, I don't even care about that anymore. Now you give it to me, you know, now I see it, you know. But I love that you brought up density, because I had this astral travel, very life-changing experience, and like a lucid dream, but I really think I literally went somewhere else, and it was...
Well, that would change anybody's life.
It would, but what happened in it really, it was almost like an NDE, you know, a near-death experience because of what happened in it, but basically I realized in this beautiful, peaceful realm that everything had consciousness. So the clouds were giggling, and I even said, can I touch you? And do you taste like cotton candy? I mean, there was a conversation. Everything was alive. Everything had consciousness. And then there were two children that another person who showed up in this vision was, the person said to the children, because this was at a bay, a beautiful pink bay. He said, do not go there, because if you do, we will not be able to come get you when the tide comes in. And I immediately looked at where he was pointing and where the little kids were pointing. And it was this dense, dirty, grimy, smoky bridge to nowhere, broken bridge to nowhere. And the minute I looked at it in the bay, I was there. I traveled. The minute you concentrate on something in that way, you're there. And I was on it, and I understood. And I think it was a metaphor for Earth, or for life. I will just say Earth in this case, that it had every vice, every form of misery, every form of pain, every form of deception, every form of hurt. You name it, any shadow was there. And I felt it, and I understood it, and I got it. And then I went back, I was back to the beautiful pink bay with the thing in the distance. And I realized that the kids were going to go find a raft, make a raft. They were gonna do something, because they were curious about that bridge, and they were not going to be able to help themselves. They were going to get out there to that bridge. But once they would get out there, it would take thousands of years to unload the grime off bit by bit by bit, life by life by life. It was that kind of sense. But nobody judged them for curiosity about it. There was no judgment. You only loved them and understood, of course, they're curious. So... and then the last part, I won't go into all of it, but the last part, I was given so much unconditional love, a feeling I've never experienced ever, so much unconditional love, that when I woke up, I was changed forever. I realized there is no judgment about our curiosity. We learn through these mistakes we make and through the things we're curious about, you know, that whatever the ego thinks is a good idea, and we go for it. But I also realized that if I was given that kind of unconditional love, I should never withhold it from someone either. And that becomes an interesting thing, because you can so easily forget about that.
Right. You know, annoying. Right. You want your freedom, but you really have to allow others to have their freedom too.
You do. But because I was downloaded with that in a way that I can never forget. I used to not even be able to tell you this, to tell anyone this without crying. It was so moving. But I really don't think we're judged for who we are, and that we're curious, and that we get in trouble with it.
Well, I don't know about that, because I get in trouble a lot because of my being... thinking outside of the box. So
yeah, but you don't get judged by the greater spirits that understand you.
No, I believe in myself, and I believe in the whole spiritual world supporting me. I just don't believe that there are a lot of muggles who understand me.
Well, that is true. Now, but that's the grimy, greasy, smoky bridge to nowhere aspect.
Yeah, right.
You're buzzing yourself off that bridge gradually, just like I am. Just everyone is doing that. And every level, you know, they're part of the shadow, you know. So it's like, okay, it's the shadow. I got it.
This is so great. We could talk for hours, and we're really nearing the end of the show. And I want people to make sure that they know we're speaking to the author of The Way of the Empath. And this book is really grabbing hold of people. I know you've had a lot of journeys out there promoting the book that are really cool. So people can find out, is there a website or, yes, good.
Yeah, sure. It's real simple, elaineclayton.com. You can send me a message through there. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm not a good Twitter person, but if you want to be my Twitter buddy, I'm there, and maybe I'll get better at Twitter at some point. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I don't tweet, and I seldom do Instagram, but I like Facebook, and you and I have connected on Facebook, and I'm very happy about that.
I'm so glad we did. We were obviously meant to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this is wonderful talking with you. It's we definitely need to do a follow-up show about intuition and, you know, all of this, because it's so important for people to live true to their higher selves. Mm-hmm. And your book is a way to apply that. And in many ways, because you also explain, you know, how to do it correctly.
Well, it's one take, right, Peter? You know, I mean,
well, great.
It was a chance to try, you know, a chance to open it up to, here's, right, try this, you know.
You've done a great job. And,
oh, thank you so much.
And it's so much fun talking with you, too.
Oh, it's such a blast. I could literally be talking to you for hours. I can't believe the time already is up.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's a short show, but it gives me the opportunity to do follow-ups.
I'm thrilled, too. You just let me know. I'll be right back here.
Good. Thank you. So thanks again for being a guest on Energy Stew. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, HEART river.org. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.